Street Smart Podcast here at the Thrive Energy Conference with Dan Hofferth and Dave Hoffman. Only interview these guys at conventions.
Yeah,
that
thanks
is
for
the
having
rule. Last time we talked was at OTC back in, I think it was May, right?
Yeah.
When that was?
Yeah, May last year.
And these guys are with Citadel Drilling. And, you know, looking forward to catching up with them and just kind of hearing what's gone on since we talked last. So, welcome. You came from Midland.
Yes, sir.
And you came from Calgary, wherever that is.
Yeah, Calgary, Canada.
And super easy flight. We talked about it at length. And his flight, he complicated his flight. And we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But, man, welcome.
Appreciate it. And, yeah, it's always good to catch up. And conferences like this are, you know, a big part of our annual activities, in the sense of you always want to have information at your fingertips. You always want to, you know, try to figure out what are other people thinking, what are other people seeing. Thrive Energy Conference here again. Thanks for hooking us up here. Like,
sure.
This is an outstanding lineup of speakers. So I think we're going to get some real good macro views on some really intelligent and important people in the world, what they think, what they see, you know, where they see everything going. I think we're all always curious about where's energy consumption going, where's energy demand going, how are those two intersecting, what does tomorrow look like. The only thing we're clear on is what happened, you know, yesterday and last year.
Not even clear on that usually.
Yeah, like everybody here is looking to get questions answered, I think, and getting a direction. And these are great events for that.
Hey, such a unique setting too. I mean, it never hurts that you're getting to hang out at the ballpark. Like, that's pretty cool.
I can't even get my head wrapped around the environment that we're in, and
it's definitely unique. So, is this the first time you've come to Thrive, or did you?
It is my first time at Thrive.
And same with you.
Mine as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really impressive.
It's pretty cool. So, yeah. When we talked, you know, obviously we did an extended version of this back in May. What's gone on at Citadel since then? What are you guys doing? How are you keeping Dave on his toes? This is the real question.
You know, I think like anything else, you look at what happened in the markets in the last year and everybody's surprised to the upside. I don't think anyone's seen production growth in the lower 48 to the degree that it occurred, and we weren't any different of a story. When we look at what did we do, well, we focused on doing it faster, more efficiently. It's always about moving that needle in a positive manner, and we, you know, we meet multiple times a week internally as a management team, and the conversation is, okay, how do we improve? How do we look forward to maintaining our position in the market? How do we keep utilization strong? We've been fortunate all throughout 2022, 2023, we were 100% utilized. So that's not a lever that we focus on pulling, you know, in the sense of that's now the expectation. Maintaining the highest possible utilization, keeping our client experience at a top-notch level so that we have the ability to ask for good term contracts and create good value and actually have a seat at that table when it comes time to renegotiate contracts. Oil prices are always going to vary. What we do have to have at the table every time is a conversation around value. And that's really been the focus of the last year, is maintaining that value, maintaining our equipment, maintaining our people at the highest possible, professional execution, all of those scenarios. So it's kind of a rotating checklist now. Again, back to the flight scenario.
Sure.
You get in the cockpit and you got the checklist that you do every time you take off in an airplane, and that's really our focus. Is every time we start one of these, you know, jobs or a new well, it's go back to the checklist. You know, as cheesy as I thought statements of mission statements and cultural statements and core values were a bit cheesy, they really have become the pillars of our organization. And that is really what matters and what brings the best out in people. We are, as much as we'd like to say that we're binary, statistical focused, spreadsheet focused organizations, and we deal in an extremely emotional business.
Sure, yeah. Sometimes irrationally emotional.
Absolutely. So, yeah, long answer to a short question, but we continue to focus on a thousand different little things. It's the little things that add up to create the experience.
Yeah, no doubt. And Dave, what have you been working on since May? Figuring all that out, like spreadsheets and stuff then.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely every aspect of that.
Right, yeah.
Operationally, I mean, on the day-to-day, you can get really tied up and burn up time in a day-to-day scenario and putting out fires and whatnot, right? Like, it takes away from your potential long-term planning and strategic planning on things like that. So I've been focusing more on a higher angle picture, trying to let the day-to-day happen through function and then plan out with the people overall goal planning.
That's great. And to your point about the mission statement, I never understood them either. And we just went through an exercise at Wildcat to kind of rework ours. And I just asked the question, why do we think this is important? And I'm 48 years old. I've been doing this for a long time. And finally, someone told me why it's important enough that it made sense to me. And it's just for that right there. So that when you're busy putting fires out and stuff, you still have sort of a North Star to go back to. And this is what we do. This is what we want to be and what we want to represent to our customers. And so it actually is important, turns out.
Truly an anchor, right?
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, it's what are you here to accomplish? You know, there's an anchor point in regards to what these are the fundamentals that guide you. And again, I don't think if you have leadership. What is leadership? And you know, people talk about that all the time. And in some cases, people have different pictures in their mind already, or in their mind's eye, that leader is a 4-star general, and it's a real command and control position, or it's, you know, everybody's got a different version. In other cases, it's something more vague, where you've got all these other qualities that you talk about. And, you know, to me, I look at it and it's like, if it's not principle-centered, it's not leadership. You know, if it's not something that you can't, if you're not willing to do it yourself, you can't tell somebody else to do it. That's just that piece, you know. And we run on all of these kind of statements that we correct each other with, and, you know, we revisit, like Dave's saying, okay, what is he focusing on? And, you know, we go back to this, we have to focus on moving boulders, not sorting gravel. And really, where is your time best spent? What do you need to delegate at, and how do you delegate without it looking like a command and control scenario? So we do spend quite a bit of time in those spaces where we talk through how are we going to achieve some of these goals, and what people do we need involved to do it?
Sure. And one of the challenges, too, in doing that is when you go to delegate, as your company grows, you bring people in that maybe don't know the history. They look at the person in leadership and think, well, this guy's never – he's just telling me what to do. They have no idea that you've done all of those things. How are you – what do you do, Dave, to bridge that gap when you're talking to people and say, you know, help them kind of understand that you have a lot of credibility in this area? Because, like he said, you broke out. He was your driller. You've done all of that type of work all the way up to COO of the company now. And so if Joe Blow comes into the company, he doesn't know that about you. He just sees – Dave Hoffman, COO. How do you convince him that you have the street cred, I guess, to be asking him to do those things?
You know what? At the end of the day, I think it comes down to the interaction, how you interact with people. You have to create a trust level for them to believe who you are and how you are, so how you interact with them. It's actually pretty easy. It's second nature if you've done it and you understand where they're coming from, you've experienced what they're going through and experience the hardships and some of the things that they've already done. It's not new and unforeseen. At times, I've noticed through different steps of my career that you have to sit back and remember that just because you're watching it doesn't mean it's not as hard as it used to be. And sometimes that gets overlooked, and sometimes you forget that. Something as simple as working on a rig floor, you know what I mean, throwing in slips or handling slips or... There's a real task level there and an effort, physical effort for that particular thing. And you gotta not forget where you came from, I guess, at the end of the day. And you gotta remember that it wasn't the greatest opportunity or greatest thing to do when you were doing it. It's still not that great. So being respectful of what's going on, but at all levels. I mean, not just a physical situational thing, but yeah, really being real, being honest, being present, and creating a trust level.
Yeah, I think people can suss out dishonesty or, yeah. or people that are not genuine, you know. And like you're talking about, human nature, I think, is just to look into your past, what you've done, and kind of romanticize it, even though it was very challenging what you were doing. And to your point, it's still challenging. But as the you get further and further removed from that, you're romanticizing that, and you're like, well, can't you get this? And you kind of tend to forget. That's a great point. So, and all of the things that you talked about, the four-star general, the top-down leadership, those are all forms of leadership, but they don't speak equally to everybody. So what do you do to identify how to approach someone from a leader position and meet them where they are and how they want to receive that leadership?
So I think, to me, there's a very clear distinction in, you know, we talked about credibility. How do we get people to buy into our credibility? And I think by not self-professing your credibility is probably step one. Your actions that day aren't as important as your actions over the last 25 or 30 years. A statement my grandmother made to me when I was a small child was, it takes a lifetime to build your reputation and one day to ruin it.
That is true.
And, you know, live by that rule where it is consistency, it's the long game, it is showing up in the same manner, and in some cases, and that's not about being too easygoing or really easy to work for either. I am not that person either. You know, Dave can attest to that.
Did you see his mannerisms?
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you said that, he goes, this was an immediate move.
Yeah.
He started twitching. His legs twitching. I like it.
I have extremely high expectations. I have an extremely firm view on showing up and what that looks like. I have a lot of those very specific outcomes in mind. That said, on a one-to-one level, or when you go to a rig visit, or when you're talking to, you know, a crew of people or the company itself, it's not about, hey, my 30 years has told me that this, blah, 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 blah. You can't go that way. You look so insincere. And I don't think the people that do that do it unconsciously because they feel uncomfortable, and I understand that. So I think being comfortable in your own skin, being comfortable in your own environment, being prepared for what, you know, what your messaging needs to look like to everybody, and it has to be authentic and truthful. And if you lead with that, I think you're going to be in a way better space, because it's going to be all the other people in the company that actually validate your credibility at that point. It's not your job to validate your credibility. Again, we had leadership training for years, and you know, one of the most powerful messages that I think that I ever heard was, leaders don't pick themselves, people pick their leaders. You know, that and the other statement that people don't quit companies, they quit bosses.
Right.
Probably two of the most impactful statements that, you know, I've ever heard as far as leadership goes.
And so truthful, both of them. I mean, and you know, to your point, as a leader, you have expectations for, hey, this is the end product, what I need that to be. And you're right to have those to be high expectations, because that's, you've learned those high expectations from the people that you're performing the work for. That's their expectation.
Yeah.
And your job is to meet that or exceed that. And it goes back to the conversation we were having just before, that now that scale has shifted to the point where if I just get normal service at times, I think that was great. And then if I critically think about it, I'm like, I mean, it was just what it should be, you know? And so how do you guard against that, Dave? Like, when you look at it and you say, here's an expectation, how do you make sure that expectation is a high enough expectation to achieve excellence?
So I think I think as a company, as a culture, you create a minimum standard in how you function and how you present yourself, what you do. And so if I hold myself to a standard, then the expectation is that the people around me, the people that work for me, the people that do things for me, follow suit at a reasonable level of expectation based on what my standard is. And I'd like to believe that I keep myself at a fairly high standard based on the fact that I have a leader or a mentor in the same aspect that that does that for himself, right? So I think it becomes a function of step-by-step progression and just ensuring that it doesn't get washed down every step, right? Like, you have to be who you say you're going to be, but do it in a manner that is conducive to the quality and execution of the entire group. And if you lose it on steps throughout levels, or however you want to put that, then levels of people, levels of commitment levels, then the washout is too big of an effect at the bottom end. So it's just presenting yourself and managing and living by the standards that are created within the culture, I think is.
Yeah. So do you guys know who Mike Leach was? I mean, he's dead now, but Mike Leach was the head football coach at Texas Tech, and then he went on to Mississippi State. I think he's Washington also, but I read his book. So he wrote a book about his time at Texas Tech, and he said he had a sign for every one of his coaches. He gave him the same sign, and then he had the biggest one for himself because he was the head coach. And it said, you are either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And that when I read that, you know, talking about impactful statements from a leadership perspective, you start introspectively looking at it. And I know in my career there have been times that I've chosen not to address something because it would just be easier to fix it myself or just a real pain in the ass to deal with. And that would fall under allowing. And when I read that, I thought it made me feel like a loser, obviously. But also it helped me to really set an accountability mark for myself based around that simple statement. So what do you do to set an accountability for yourself where you say, I can't fall below this, you know, kind of like you're talking about a washout. Like, I can't allow it to slide past this and still call it a high expectation.
That's a daily challenge. That is where the word discipline comes into play. In my view, where you have to intentionally wake up. It starts as soon as you wake up, and it's, okay, what am I going to be today? And that's a choice. That's, again, it's a choice to wake up that way. So, you know, when you go back to these famous sports quotes that are always out there, one of the most powerful ones, again, that hit me is the harsh reality of what life is going to be. And if you're not going to participate in it at a high level, it's going to chew you up, and you're gonna feel like a victim. You're gonna be a victim to whatever your environment challenge hits you with as challenges.
Well, life is designed to victimize you for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, seen a statement the other day, and it's just one of those things that we've heard it over the years. It was just really eloquently put, and it really describes to me the harsh reality and the truthfulness of our business in regards to what our expectations are, what we're here to do, and what's going to happen if we don't. And the statement was, as a coach, it's my job, and this is a coach telling a player this, as a coach, it's my job to find somebody better than you. As a player, it's your job to make sure I can't find somebody to replace you. Yeah. That's how you're going to stay on the team.
Yeah.
And you know, what an amazing statement. You rethink that, you play it over in your head a few times, and it really reconnects you to all of it. Like, sure, people may see me as the boss of the company, you know, CEO title, all of that. I have people I have to report to. I have a board of directors. I have investors. I also have people I have to be accountable to, and same statement's true. If I'm the player that can be replaced, I'll be replaced.
Sure.
That's just the cruel natural laws of natural selection in our business world as well. So you do have to wake up intentionally, or you will be replaced, or you will not be selected as next.
Right, you'll be selected out is what will happen.
Again, you'll be culled from the herd.
That's right. And so the word discipline is one of my favorites. And I train jiu-jitsu 4 days a week, and two of those days are at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I have people say, how do you get motivated to do that? I said, I'm never motivated to do it. I literally sometimes have to go 1, 2, 3 and stand up out of bed to go. But it comes down to discipline, because motivation comes and goes.
Right.
And when things get hard, I'm rarely motivated to do a hard thing. But I know from a discipline standpoint, this has to get done. Was there I know in my career there have been times where that discipline failed. But having that guiding star, that North Star, you know, whether it's a mission statement or just a personal I have to do it this way. How do you coach someone that you don't necessarily see having that discipline? How do you get them there, and can you?
In some cases, you can't.
Sure.
In other cases, you try, and you know, if it's an individual you have identified as needed in the company, and you don't, again, you haven't got a player to replace them.
Yeah, yeah.
You work with them, yeah. Right? And there's always going to be these challenging individuals in your personal life and in your corporate life that are going to be more difficult than others. And we naturally, again, are emotional creatures, and
we call those children.
Yeah.
That's what I call them in my house.
We're not designed to be the same person. So if we can't acknowledge that out of the gate, and again, there's those that have extremely difficult times that they have to have everybody be the same type of person, and they have to have everybody agree with their philosophy, and they have to have everybody, you know, convince them to do it their way. And that is the fastest route to failure, in my mind, that you can possibly have, because for me, it is the collaborative decision that creates the best outcome. And it's not what I woke up thinking is probably not the best call when I did it in a bubble. You dial in Dave, you dial in our superintendents, you dial in other aspects of the company depending on what the challenge is. If it's something full corporate, you dial in HR and finance. We get everybody's voice at the table and we have that conversation. And I think that's the other thing about discipline, is that you also have to be disciplined in the concept of treating people with the idea that they're actually there to do good. You know, we have a nasty habit in companies and in society to think the worst of people. And it's like, you're cutting them down. Well, what do you expect their performance to look like if you just got done cutting them down? If you work on, hey, here's what you're doing wrong, here's what you're doing wrong, here's what you're doing wrong, their only possibility is to do things wrong.
Right.
And again, I believe in talking about what is the positive, what is working. Again, what is the mission statement? Our mission statement is, you know, creating a positive and extraordinary drilling experience through listening to our clients and our employees. That's a powerful word.
Yeah.
And if we don't connect to that, we're going to self-prescribe ourselves out of business. You know, again, how are we going to drill this well? How does Dave wake up in the morning? Dave spends a ton of time on calls and in-person meetings with our operator clients. And the question is, what do you need?
Well, and plus the fact that he has to turn the key 3 times and all that, it just eats up time.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of things going on before he can do anything. But no, I mean, I think you're absolutely right in that you've got to, that collaboration is fantastic. And many times in my career, especially early on, there was no collaboration. It was old school.
Yeah.
You're going to do it this way. Dave, have you ever seen a point where, like, at what point do you feel like collaboration sort of gets in the way of making a decision? Because that can definitely paralyze the organization if you overdo that.
So ultimately, I think there still needs to be some accountability for the decisions that are made. And because of that, there's always a responsible party, like think of a totem pole. There has to be a function of somebody's got the ultimate responsibility of that. And so collaboration can create, like you said, a whole another aspect when overdone. The idea behind using collaboration needs to be so that you don't get tunneled into quick choice decisions or get tunneled into a thought process that makes you right, because it's not right wrong. It has to be to the stage that you would have the potential of having an aha moment and saying, oh, did I overlook that? Could I have missed this? What might I not have seen in that? And if you don't use it genuinely, collaboration can also be used in a manner that isn't productive at all. It's done just out of function. You have to be genuine with it and actually have the intention and attention to detail to say that if something positive comes out of a collaboration, that you'll use it. So, sorry, that's a whole lot. But anyway, long story short,
it's too late for that.
There's always a point where an inflection point where it can become a non-positive, a messy aspect of people that nothing comes of it and nothing good comes of it. So,
right. You've missed the natural conclusion of it, and now you're in this sort of no man's land where you're just kind of spinning your wheels.
You know, we talk about everybody wants a seat at the table to be involved in that collaborative conversation. Now, it takes courage and trust for the leadership to bring more voices into that seat at the table. But when it's also, there's also a responsibility of those that do get brought in to have an elevated level of emotional intelligence when you're there. Just because you've been brought in to participate in the collaboration doesn't mean your idea is going to get implemented to the degree that you maybe had hoped. Your voice was heard. It was brought into the conversation. In some cases, it's adopted. But in the cases that it's not, that's where the emotional intelligence has to come into play. And again, like Dave says there, otherwise you get caught in that circular reference that you're not going to create any value. And it has to be a decision that is made out of that outcome, that room, that day, or that week. There has to be a time limit, and there has to be a deciding factor, individual, that says, okay, here's a direction. Now, I always talk about dog sleds and how do you run an efficient dog sled team? And if your direction is going to go north.
He's really putting this on us right
now. Of course you do.
But if you're going north and you've got 20% of the dogs going northeast and 20% of the dogs going northwest, you have got a lot of wasted energy, and that sled is not operating at its ultimate efficiency. It is about having all of your energy focused in one direction. The direction itself isn't as important. It's all of the energy focused in that direction from all people.
Yeah, and what's interesting, you know, to bring it kind of full circle on what we talked about at the beginning, ultimately, once you go through that collaborative process, a decision has to be made, and sometimes that comes down to a single person making that decision, whether it's Dave or you or the superintendent or someone like that. And the only way that the group that didn't get everything they wanted or even anything that they wanted comes away feeling any internal peace is that genuine understanding that you've been there, done that, and you're making a decision based on your lived experience, and they have to trust you for that. So building that trust out the gate is paramount to that type of collaborative effort. If you don't have it, people are just going to get pissed and not want to be there anymore.
Not everybody gets the opportunity to see the full picture either, right? You have clients, you have people, sometimes there's long game planning, things that are going into the thought process and the collaboration and the decision that's being made, and respectfully communicating the justification for the decision is often the best way to get people to help them understand the big picture. Like there's a lot of thought and energy that goes into simple ideas based on what the knockout effects could be and what could potentially happen down the road or liability of what could all of these things play into why decisions are made and not everybody's privy to the full scale, so being able to communicate that communicate and articulate why these decisions are made like this is huge, and it creates that trust factor that you're talking about. If you do that a few times, people can see that, oh, he's just not just making a harsh decision or a quick decision on what I'm thinking about right now. There's something else at bay that I might be missing.
Now you're looking at second and third order effects. Yeah. You are, and they may not even see those or even need to see those. But for them to understand that those exist and that's factored into your decision, I you're right. That is critical to helping them understand that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I don't know how much time we've been doing this. I imagine Lauren would wave her hands at some point if we were going too long. And she's doing something else over there. So, anyway, what do you guys hope to get out of this week?
Again, it's all about what picture's getting painted for 2024.
Sure.
Where's consensus on outlook? Everybody would like to have the crystal ball on what the price of oil is going to be 6 months from now. When is gas going to come back? We're taking a look at maybe more of our own domestic views on what our troubles are here in the lower 48. And, you know, what does that look like? Well, we've got a depressed rig count in Texas, and it's based on gas prices being depressed. That hurts all oil field services side as well. We're seeing a lot of consolidation. I'm looking forward to hearing more messaging around, you know, what the outcome of the major consolidation has been. Like, we had some big deals that just went down in the last 6-8 months. Massive oil companies merging up together. And again, one of the statements this morning, and a statement I've used many times, is 1 + 1 just unfortunately isn't equaling 2. When we're taking a look at rig count, we see, you know, a couple of significant oil companies come together. If they each had 8-9 rigs working, the outcome is usually that they're going to be running 12 later on and not 16 or 18. So what does that look like? The other side is we continue to surprise to the upside. And, you know, what a great message that it's hurting us to that degree where
we are
creating more production with fewer drilling rigs and fewer services required because our efficiencies are continuing to go up. Exciting business. You know, we are innovating, we are digitizing, we are using AI, we are using all sorts of new tools that nobody even thinks are available to the oil field in general if you're on the outside looking in. And it's just, it's an amazing time to be in our business. The advancements are unreal. You know, look at your business at Wildcat and the manner, like, we toured the facility and taking a look at how you actually inspect pipe, or when we have a pipe failure, the granular levels that we're able to get into and take a look at it. And, you know, you are now making data-driven decisions based on chemical analysis, based on microscopic analysis, based on, you know, tools we didn't have access to, you know, long ago, you know, not that long ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago, you're just like, it broke.
Yeah. And, you know, and then we just finger point, I feel it's your fault.
It's probably,
or
that
you did
and
this.
Yeah,
or
you owe me some money on that deal.
Yeah, and we negotiated it. And it was a negotiated outcome as opposed to a binary outcome, and that it was either a 1 or a 0.
Yeah, we say, no, this happened because of well conditions and not equipment conditions, or vice versa. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, so again, we see all of these different oil field services and all these different vendors at these conferences, and, you know, we get to then experience what are they doing different, what's new, what's on the horizon. You've got nat gas providers here for our generators, you've got the engine manufacturers represented, you've got the pipe manufacturers, you've got all these amazing opportunities to learn what's new. And to me, that's one of the most exciting things about the Thrive Conference, about OTC, about some of the IADC conferences when we get together. And again, the collaborative outcome, what is going to come out of the room, because you can't predict it. And it's one of my favorite things to do that's been afforded to me with my position in the company and, you know, my life, where you get to keep going on this journey of learning. And, you know, I guess I'm just a rig nerd where I really enjoy equipment and seeing what's different about it. And, you know, what can we do different? And it's just always a conversation that I enjoy having.
I'm changing your name in my phone now to Rick Hurd, so you know.
Some people like sports cars, some people like rigs. I mean, it's just like, yeah.
To each his own.
I hear
for
him.
Sure. So how about you, Dave? What are you looking for this week? And you say ditto, and I'm going to throw you out of the chair.
I think all of that included.
That's a roundabout way of saying ditto.
I'm really interested. I really look forward to the speakers, and I like to hear their projections, their ideas, their thoughts, and everything based on what's going to happen and their own companies. And it's a great opportunity to, like Dan said, see all the vendors and do some networking. Obviously, in the last couple of years, automation and AI and things like that have started to become a really big aspect and focal point of the business and the innovation that the business is doing, our business specifically. And things like this allow you to stay up to date with the people that are doing it. You see partnerships going on with like SLB and Neighbors in an automation, digital automation suites, really looking into that and listening to how people are going to start using those resources. The first speaker today, one thing that was said was that no one company has a full capability of doing these things and moving these things forward on their own, even SLB, which is I thought was pretty impressed because it's a massive company.
Yeah.
But they need partners, and they partnered, as I think everyone's aware, with Neighbors officially. But on a way smaller scale, I mean, all of us companies are looking for these partners and these opportunities, and I think being in a environment like this really grows, that fosters the opportunity to meet these people, to learn about these things, and to work towards the future innovation and growth.
That's awesome. Well, I'm really thankful to get to sit down with you guys again. It's always great to catch up with two of my favorite Canadians. And I make you guys come to the U.S. to do it. But it's awesome to see you guys again. Great to see that Citadel's, you know, continuing its, you know, top of the line service and being a great partner to Wildcat as well, and a great partner to me in the podcast. Thank you guys so much for being a part of it and hanging out with me for a little bit.
Yeah, and thank you. We really appreciate what you do for the industry, both on the Wildcat side and especially on the podcast side as well. You know, bringing great content out, and again, we all get the windshield time driving in the car probably more times than we wish to admit, but these are great opportunities, again, to hear different stories and hear those perspectives. Again, thank you for what you do, and appreciate you having the time to take with us.
Always have time for that.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.